Artemis doesn't have enough, the Delta B, in other words, it doesn't have enough power to slow it down to go into a 60-mile orbit. I mean, they're going to be in this long and elongated orbit. But there's other reasons for that. It's basically because of the space station that they want to also put up on a permanent basis that they're going to dock with first. But good talk. Very well done. I particularly like the guy when he started talking about the bicycle, that you got on a bicycle, you turn the handlebars one way and the tire goes the other way and back and forth, and he's trying to drive this thing. He threw that in. I didn't think that was necessary, but it was pretty cool anyway. Back to you, Roy.
And the chicken. Yeah, I mean, he was trying to lighten the mood, because it was a real stern response. And I think one of the most damning comments he made during his talk is that this depends upon multiple refueling. And not a single refueling has actually been accomplished yet. And they don't even know how many refuelings they would need. You know, they started with 4, and they moved it up to 12, and then 12 plus. So that's not a good image. You know, if you're planning to accomplish something in the next year or two or even 3, you should at least know how many tanks you're going to need to refuel your ship. So, again, it comes across, unfortunately, more of a public relations ploy, you know, to make sure that when they have to go to Congress, the Congress doesn't basically bankrupt them and, you know, zero out their budget.
I think the sense of the video was simplicity. He's calling for simplicity. He says, of course, I cannot forget the chicken, the head chicken head, how it fixed itself in the tridimensional space, like a gimbal, and the gimbal was only what? Think about the gimbal being present for the cameras for the past 4 years, maybe 5. But simplicity. So he was referring to successful flights, extremely simple, versus 15, because he got the 15 refueled, where none of the refueling was done yet in space. Paul, speak up.
Yeah, we've talked about the refueling here on the net. And I remember saying dozens of flights would be required, because there's boil off, and you know, you put, you know, fuel into one tank, and as time goes on, it's going to evaporate in space. There's other problems when that evaporates. You're gonna have a rocket that's actually moving in space. That when it bends off, it actually creates a movement of that particular rocket that you set up there. So all kinds of problems that they're going to have to work out to do this. This was proposed in the one of our bond days. There was different choices. You know, should we you know, go into orbit and dock in Earth orbit and then go off to the moon, or should we go to the moon first, docking around the moon? Should we have refueling in Earth orbit first? I remember discussing that years ago. You know, von Braun, of course, elected for the Holloman situation, where you just with what they did. But they actually talked about possible refueling back in the old days when they were trying to figure out how they were going to get to the moon. Don't forget, Kennedy made that. They didn't have a clue exactly how they were going to do it. I mean, the Apollo program was underway, but they still weren't really sure exactly how they were going to do it. But here we're going back to refueling around the Earth, landing a vehicle vertically, like the old movies from the 1950s with Flash Gordon, you know, having this thing land vertically. I mean, it's really, they've really changed everything. But we'll see. This second human landing system that they have that that Blue Origin is involved with, and you know he's working with Lockheed and Honeywell and a couple of the other ones. That is more of a 1960s design, but SpaceX is completely different. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I'm concerned that they're trying to be a wee bit too flashy. I mean, I understand that, you know, it just goes back to those things, if you can do a thing, you should do it, but I think it was better in a way they kept it simple, because I think the overwhelming reason for Apollo was to get to the moon. I don't feel it's quite that with Artemis. I think it's, again, kind of public relations. They want to do it with flash. They don't want to do it with style, even though there's no real good engineering background in a lot of these things. They're starting from square one. You know, I mean, if you want to complete Artemis in 10 or 15 years, yeah, sure. But not by the timetable that they keep reporting. It's delusional almost.
Yeah, it is a good point.
I mean, a couple of years ago, they were talking about 2024, 2025, and now I've heard 2026, and I'm kind of betting on 2027 right now. In fact, going back, before SpaceX got involved, plan was probably 2028,
and
that number changed in 2024. Back in, I think that was 2016 and 2017,
was
during the previous administration.
Yes, I know.
I knew that wasn't going to work out. It doubled.
Yeah, unfortunately, both of you doubled with each other. I was able to hear Paul. I couldn't hear you, Wesley. I get the feeling that NASA's public relations branch is listening to Elon Musk speeches too much. They're very reminiscent of his poorly planned dates of things.
Oh, yeah. But I was under the impression that Elon Musk chose simplicity. So, my question was, why did NASA decide to go not the way that it was already checked and practically applied? But they are trying to go the way that has so many variables hold.
I'm not sure of your comment or question on that one. Can you repeat that? I didn't quite get that, Wes.
Okay, you're doubling again. Paul, what Wes was bringing up, and I tend not to agree with it, is that Musk also kind of stressed simplicity. So he asked you why NASA seems to have taken the road to flashy, esoteric means rather than just going back to the 1960s playbook and trying to use the same type of technology, slightly tweaked, for the 21st century.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors involved. Reusability is one. They want a craft that's going to go land on the moon and come back and dock with a space on the moon, and they need this to do this over and over again. That particular vehicle has to be refueled, whether it's going to be a SpaceX Starship or whether it's going to be Jeff Bezos' human landing vehicle that he's planning for Artemis 5 and beyond. Both of those will have to be refueled in orbit around the moon. So there's going to be a lot of issues here. One's going to be being refueled with liquid methane. The other one's going to be refueled with liquid hydrogen. You know, there's different systems on both vehicles. So Jeff Bezos' version, the thing lands on the moon, and then the lower stage does stay behind, and then it goes back up. That's one version of it. On the earlier one, the future ones, the whole thing is supposed to return. They don't have this nailed down yet. That's for sure. You remember during the Apollo days, they waited on Grumman on Long Island to perfect their vehicle before they knew that they were going to be able to actually land on the moon. They were going full blast on the Apollo Saturn system. No problem with the idea of going orbiting the moon and all, but they still needed that vehicle, that LEM, to be completed by Grumman. But it was different, That was, it was 100% funded by NASA. This thing is, they let out contracts, billion-dollar contracts with these two companies, and they're supposed to fulfill the contracts on their own without going over budget. If they go over budget, they have to eat the price. Everything's different. So we'll see. But right now the plan is for Starship to be the first one to complete the first landing on the moon. And as we know, they're way behind. I wrote a letter back to Wes and I said, the problem is they keep blowing them up, That's not the way to go. You're right.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't want it to turn into yet another diatribe. Elon Musk does not believe in simplicity. I ask you to take a look at the Cybertruck. Matter of fact, there's a YouTube regarding the Cybertruck that's on my link page. That's an example of absolutely lack of simplicity. And a very dangerous car. It's so dangerous that it's not legal to drive any place out of the United States because Europe has much more stringent safety guidelines. If that car hits you, it's designed to practically lop your head off. So, and stainless steel is a terrible medium for cars. And it was supposed to be 3 millimeters, which would have made it as heavy as a damn tank. And I don't understand why anyone would design a car for a nuclear holocaust, primarily because it increases the energy required to move it from one place to another. So it's heavy, it's slow, it gets stuck, and they can't manufacture it. Aside from that, it's a wonderful device.
Right, it's the DeLorean on steroids, another stainless steel disaster.
Yes, but I think the DeLorean was prettier. This is really boxy. This is a guy's idea of what you thought the future was going to look like in 1980, which is where he's gotten most of his ideas, in my humble opinion. That in the 60s as well. Certainly nothing from this century.
Boy, did you go to the 64 World's Fair? Were you around for that?
Yes, I was. Unfortunately, my sister kind of ran the whole place, so I had to wait online for some strange reason at the Revlon exhibit. I did go to the Atomic Energy Commission, and I got a whole bunch of PR books on radioactivity and, for some reason, computers. Which was fun. I could have spent a week or a month there. It was a great place. I just wish I had the time for it back then.
Okay, the best $2 anybody could spend. I guess that would be, what, $20 today just to get in. And it was a great place. And the reason I bring that up is what was the one pavilion you went in and you saw all these models of, down below, the streets, the modern city, and all these little cars, tiny cars. But you know, some of those designs of those cars look like something that, you know, that Musk has come out with this, you know, little wedge-shaped cars zooming around on the platform. That's what that reminds me of. And I know he didn't go to the 64 World's Fair because he was in South Africa at the time.
There is a correction. It means the car is absolute disaster. The sharp edges, unbelievable that such a car could be constructed. But the car was actually made with simplicity in mind. It means you have only the necessity inside of the car. But if you want to have a roof over your back, then you have it. But if you do it, then you do not have a mirror, back mirror. But instead of that back mirror, you have a camera that serves as a mirror. But if you're not satisfied with it, you have two mirrors, one on the left and one on the right, but you don't have to have it. Now, in Europe, you can have and you can drive that car if you buy it in the United States. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not quite sure about that. I mean, everything I've ever read about it is that it's that they won't approve it for outside the United States. I mean, it's real poorly designed. I've seen more than a few people cite an old Simpsons episode where Homer finds a half-brother he never knew who owned a car company who decided that he was going to give Homer the chance as an everyman to design a car of his dreams, and he designs an over-designed, expensive piece of trash, and the guy goes bankrupt. And keep in mind, once again, with the Cybertruck, they reduced the features approximately in half, and they doubled the cost of buying it. And they've only been able to apparently manufacture 10 of them. I think because they don't know how to do it on a mechanized method, that the 10 cars are probably hand built. So it, you know, it makes the Edsel seem like a dream car.
The price was when they were first introduced 4 years ago was supposed to be $48,000 for four wheels and two motors. Now it looks like $96,000. If you're lucky, you're going to pay for three motors version. But more likely, they say it's about 120. Now, you add the tax on the top of it, and minus there is some environmental rewards. I'm not sure. Something that government sponsors, you still end up with $100,000. So, is it that Musk is trying to be fancy like Rolls Royce or Bentley without the luxury of it, but just because of the heck of it? Dr. Roy.
Well, I mean, that gives me too much ammunition. You know, people ask him, why are you making it resistant to nuclear attacks? And his answer was very typical for him. Why not? I don't think he thinks anything through. I think he just glibly goes along his life trying to be as clever as humanly possible and failing repeatedly.
Hello?
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
This doesn't answer any questions, but it just throws a couple out there. Have to recognize that any of these vehicles you're talking about, when their gas tank, which they don't have, is empty, still weighs over 1,000 pounds. So work is defined as a force through a distance. we pretend we are technologists and recognize science. Dropping a bunch of cars around the country, 1,000-pound empty gas tanks, doesn't take a lot of math to realize it's really stupid.
Well, that's easy for you and me and Wesley and Paul and everyone out there to say, but you can't have Elon say it because it was actually going to be heavier. The original specification for his car was going to have 3-millimeter steel plates, which would have almost doubled the present ridiculous weight. He scaled it down to, I think, 1.6 millimeters simply because he couldn't even hand machine them at 3 millimeters, and also they'd be ridiculously heavy. As it is, I think there's already video of these trucks getting stuck in the mud because they're just so damn heavy.
I wasn't so much attacking any particulars of Elon Musk's thing. It was just the idea of 1,000-pound batteries, at least. You know, you can't tank it 1,000 pounds when it's empty. You got to haul around the country and refill it where you can on fossil fuels. Where's the savings? This makes no sense.
Well, that's the kind of the floor of electric devices that aren't really tied to a wire above like a trolley or such. As you increase the weight carrying capacity, you get into more and more trouble because, as you mentioned, the beauty of trucks is that when they have finished their trip, the gasoline is used up and the weight is gone, and it takes far less energy to move them as they progress, whereas batteries always have that weight. The amount of weight difference between a charged battery and a discharged battery is inconsequential. But, you know, I mean, that's the problem. It's a bigger problem, if you will, with the Tesla Semi, with the actual trucks. There's only about, I think, 13 or 30 trucks that were manufactured. I think they were subsidized by your tax dollars and mine and given out to major companies to play around with, and they're a quiet public relations disaster. They've been getting stuck or running out of power and they have to kind of put another cyber truck on a bed, a truck bed that's run by gas, and make sure it's nearby the other truck so they can swap them out when they fail. Like I said before, I hate to sound like a one-note guy, but if you own any Tesla stock, sell the damn thing before it's worthless.
You're not going to like my synopsis of the whole situation.
Okay, but it shouldn't stop you from offering it.
I think that crazy freak of a guy is trying to say, this is a stupid idea and you're all paying for it.
I think you're falling for the PR. You think he's a clever troll. And although I guess it is possible, I don't care how clever a troll you are, but the cleverest of trolls probably is not going to flush $44 billion down the drain doing a similar thing for X.
Your logic is impeccable. I have no caveats to it. Your everything you said bears consideration. Everything I said bears consideration also. I'm curious where it all turns out. Because I can't fault your thoughts at all.
Yeah, I just hope that he's not the guy who triggers the next tech bubble burst. Because I see it coming down the road. He's gotten too many people to invest too many billion dollars, including New York State paid him $1 billion for a non-existent battery company, a manufacturing center. Other states have given him billions of dollars, and our beloved federal government, through NASA and through all kinds of other agencies, have given him billions of dollars. So we probably, hopefully, won't go bankrupt, but I'm concerned about the tech bubble that's going to burst one of these days, and I think he's going to burst it, but yeah, we'll see.
NWS2N.
Yes, Paul.
NWS2N recognized. I'm going to throw in for a second.
Okay, we tripled. I think Paul wanted to say something, and then Jim.
Okay, I thought I doubled with Jim. Yeah, I was just going to say, I go to Home Depot quite a bit. What do you think my chances are of seeing one of these Cybertrucks, somebody with the back opening up, putting in potted plants, bringing it home? I think I got a better shot of watching a Starship land on the moon in 2024 or 2025. I don't think so. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you. As I mentioned, they have manufactured 10 entire units. As far as I'm aware, I don't think that they figured out how to build them in bulk, so they're all going to be hand built, and they're terrible design. And as people report failure modes with it, it'll get less and less demand. I wouldn't be at all amazed if they sell a total of maybe about 200 or 300 models before they just forget about talking about it, like they have done for the Roadster. The Roadster, I think, was announced 4, 5, 6 years ago. He actually had people put a down payment of 50%, and he doesn't even tell anyone these days when it's expected. So it'll just fade away and won't be mentioned at future gatherings. He'll move on to other lies and such. Jim, what did you want to say?
This is a complicated one, but I'll tell you this. Do you think Elon really paid the bill for that truck? And do you think the shape of the truck, whether it's trapezoidal or arrow-shaped or round-shaped, really makes a big difference in the whole picture? The funds for that have come out of our taxes, not out of his coffers. And we're chasing a fart in the wind with this whole electric car thing. There's not enough electric being generated to run out of the houses. We're going to run cars on it, yeah. No. No. Not today, not tomorrow, not anytime soon. That doesn't mean it's not a good idea for some other day. I'm not saying it doesn't have merit. But the ridiculousness is going, well, 3.2 years from now, we're all going to be electric. It's literally absurd. Everybody here that's using ohm meter knows it's a stupid idea.
Lastly, recognize, let me say my 2 cents. We're going to have to wrap this up soon, by the way, guys. I don't think he's lost Tesla money. I think he's lost them a lot of prestige and a lot of flash. Unfortunately, Tesla is a very overpriced company. It has no earnings. Tesla stock does not give a dime. The idea is you invest in it for its stock price, and the value you gain is by the stock going up. The stock has been going down for the last few years. I think it was a high of 890 or 92 or something, and now it's down to 200 and change. It'll go farther down. The amount of cars that it sells is not correlated with its stock price, which is deeply overvalued. And the more gas he makes and the more cruddy cars that he could never sell, the sooner the price of Tesla stock will normalize with the market. He presents Tesla as a tech company. It is not a tech company. It does not do autopilot. He had to recall 2 million cars because it does not do autopilot. It is an automotive company. And automotive companies have complete different price structures. So it's going to devalue Tesla stock, and in that, since he owns a good percentage of the stock, it will make him less likely to be the richest man in the universe.
Good point, Paul. What is the chance for you to see a Cybertruck in the Home Depot? But I was thinking, what is the chance for you to see people going to Home Depot with their Bentleys and Rolls Royces? It is, but it is very small. So it is a luxury, the vehicle, as far as the features we didn't mention that there are few things. He claims that the average house could be powered from this truck for 24 hours if there is an outage, energy outage, and the rear wheels turned through. So I was thinking, maybe Dr. Roy saw it too, I was thinking, is it turning that much that it may collide during the turn with the adjacent vehicles on the next lane, or it is like it is holding the rear turn in the angle that it allows sharper turn? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question was. One of the major things that concern people, is heavy. Heavy things, and it doesn't crush. So modern safe cars are built to take the energy of a collision by crushing into itself. These cars don't do that. They're made out of steel. So I think one of the major problems is that the front angle is so steep and sharp, and it's so heavy that if you're a pedestrian and you collide with the front of the car, it just chops you in half at that point. So, you know, I mean, it's a very poor design for safety.
Dr. Roy, I was talking about front wheels and the rear wheels. The rear wheels, the wheels are turning too. And I was asking about the angle. Maybe Paul knows more about it.
KXD comment.
Yes, Jim?
We're quickly devolving into throwing deck chairs off the Queen Mary, the Titanic. 1,000-pound batteries on cars, in effect, 1,000-pound gas tanks on cars, make the concept of cars untenable. That's either by accident or on purpose. End of discussion.
Again, I think by accident. He has delusions of grandeur. He thinks he's an engineer. He's not. He thinks he's an inventor. He's not. He thinks he's a genius. He's certainly not. So I think it's out, all of this is out of ignorance and, you know, a somewhat, if you sit down and chat with a 10-year-old in 1960, they'll come up with the same ideas because, you know, I was the kid in 1960 and I remember the cover of Popular Science and I remember the flying cars and the things that would go on to be the Hyperloop and a lot of other things that he sold. You know, the solar battery powered roadways and such. So I think it's out of stupidity.
Do you remember the Popular Mechanics electric car that looked like the Cybertruck squished down a little bit?
Not specifically.
Dr. Roy, do you remember in long time ago there was a concept which right now is in the Cybertruck, that when you turn your wheels, front wheels, to the right, the wheels, the rear wheels, turn to the left?
Okay, I unfortunately don't know enough about car transmissions and such to tell you if that's a terribly good feature or a terribly bad feature. I have not read anything to focus on that aspect. There are so many glaring problems with Cybertruck's design that maybe they ran out of printing space or something.
Okay, so in other words, they did it to make this car to have a very narrow turn. Because in my van, when I have for me to make a U-turn or make a circle, and there is a two-way road, it's not easy. Now this truck, thanks to the future it has, because I remember there were 15 years ago, they were proposing something that the wheels could turn so you don't, when you try to park, you actually slide your car to the space where the parking is on the side of the road. So this way you don't have to maneuver so much. Now, the Cybertruck didn't do that. What they did is they made the front wheel turning, and at the same time the rear wheels are turning in opposite ways. But I see the problem here. If you are turning and you have a car on the left-hand side and your wheels, rear wheels, start to turn to the left, now you hit that adjacent line car. Let's see you, Dr. Rock.
Yeah, there's someone trying to throw their call sign out. Their amplitude is very low. So if you could bring up your amplitude and try again.
I don't know if that's me.
Yes, HHU. That was you.
Yeah, just on the information with regard to that steering issue, General Motors had in their trucks in maybe the 2000s, and they called it quadrasteer. And it had that characteristic of where the wheels would turn opposite on most speed maneuvers for parking, ease, tight turning radius. And when you went above a certain wheels would go in a slant on the same direction, not opposite, for that issue of, you know, if you're going, making a lane change, etc. And I think Nissan had something similar called Hikus steering, which did a similar thing. So it did exist, but the problem is it was expensive. Trying to keep the wheels aligned was a big deal, so it's not around anymore.
Okay, thanks for the info. And my guess is Tesla hasn't solved the problem either. They've just included it because Elon thought it looked neat or sounded neat or something like that. Anyway, it's been loads of fun. We must do this again, not this year, but next year. I think we got to roll this all up and give Paul a chance to do the SpaceNet report. Okay, Wes?
Paul, we're waiting for the space report.
Yeah, Jim wanted to say something in closing. Give Jim a chance.
I just wanted to point out that as much as this forum seems vacuous at the beginning, there's a lot of content, other people that have something to say here. And as the content evolves and people kind of engage, they do. And I give that hop for the forum that we're talking on, and that we should continue it and support the people that have supported it over the years. Roy, thank you. And continue to challenge each other. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Roy.
Okay, good sentiments, Jim, for 2024. The next time we all meet up here, it'll be January 7th, 2024. Next Sunday is Christmas Eve. The next Sunday after is New Year's Eve. And I'm sure you guys have better things to do. But I hope you'll join us all together January 7th. But right now it is time for Paul, the US2N, and the SpaceNet report.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. And you have Netflix, movie that just came out, Leave the World Behind, and what they do to these Teslas, I don't want to tell you because we're ruining the movie, but it's unbelievable. Anyway, let me drop it, and then we'll start the SpaceNet report.
Are you talking about Julia Roberts' movie?
Yeah, it was. I don't know if you saw it, but it's unbelievable.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. Yes, I did. It's a little slow. The movie is a little slow, but it's extremely well done. There is another one. A little bit more of science fiction. Emilia. So look for Emilia because it plays only till 15, I believe, and then they're gonna take it, or just a few days, I don't know. Emilia, it's a good done stuff. It's complete nonsense, but it's scientifically sound. I mean, it doesn't, but I love it. Good to you.
Okay, well, I'll check that out as well. But this one, the reason I bring it up is what goes on with these Teslas. It's, you know, yeah, it's a slow movie, it's a world behind, but it's no bargain. But the Tesla part is, it's worth it. Just waiting for what goes on with those cars. Anyway, so the SpaceNet report, we only have a few things anyway. The Lunar Surface Electromagnetics Experiment, NITE, they called it, which was brought up last week. I think Jeff brought it up. Spacecraft that's going to land on the dark side of the moon, the opposite side of the moon, in the future, probably 2025. I'm going to guess probably 2026, the way things are going. But that's an experiment that will be landing there, and then it's got these antennas that come out about 20 feet long, like dipoles. And the idea is to get signals from, you know, from that they can receive without any electromagnetic interference, no radio interference, no nothing from Earth, because the moon will be blocking any signals that are out there. This, I looked into it. It is a planned flight, and it's going to fly on something called the Blue Ghost from Firefly. Firefly is a regular company. I mean, they're building everything. They're building this lander that they plan on landing multiple times on the moon. And with this experiment, the Lucy experiment will be attached to Blue Ghost. But Blue Ghost is a real thing that's being built. There's equipment that's being made for it. And Firefly builds their own rockets. They've actually launched a couple of rockets to orbit so far from Vandenberg, California. So it's a company that I think I'll have to look into the future. I think this particular company is going to go. Some of them come up, but they don't make it. I think Firefly is going to do good. Firefly at one time went belly up and was resurrected. And next thing you know, it's got NASA contracts. It's got Defense Department contracts that they signed up with. In fact, they've given them a contract. They've launched a couple of satellites for them already. So, looking forward to see what Firefly does. They're also building separate engines that will eventually be put into the Grumman Antares rocket, which launches the Cygnus spacecraft. From Wallops Island, so they're developing their own engines. They're going to be selling engines to they're working with Grumman on it, and we'll see how they do. Let me just drop it for a second. WS2S. Okay, yeah. Let's look at the time. We did eat up a lot of time. That's okay. The New Shepard is going to be tomorrow. New Shepard is cargo. Well, it's the cargo version. They have the cargo version and they have the crew version. Crew version, you might remember, this is the one that launched Shatner, William Shatner, to space, along with other people that decided to pay thousands or hundreds, I don't know what they paid, $100,000 or so to get launched into space. One of the people that actually went up was John Shepard's daughter. Not John Shepard. Shepard's daughter. Shepard had a daughter. Naturally, he's dead now. Alan Shepard's gone. But the daughter was still around. She actually got to ride in this thing a while back. But back two Septembers ago, a little over a year ago, they were launching a cargo version of this thing, and the first stage, it's only really a one-stage vehicle with the capsule located on top of it, and that booster actually deteriorated. It had a problem with the exhaust. The exhaust started to burn up on it, and the capsule sensed it. They had sensors, and that lit off a solid rocket that's inside the capsule, and this capsule separated from the booster. It took a while to figure out what happened. I should be telling it's over a year now. But they have made some adjustments and changes to the rocket engine itself. They've made some serious changes, including the nozzle that comes off that actually burnt up. But the major changes have been made. It's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen vehicle. So they're going to do a flight tomorrow. They have 33 science experiments in the capsule. And tomorrow morning at 9:30 our time, they'll put it on their website. You put in Blue Origin webcast, and I should be able to get to see this thing, see if it works out. It goes up, it goes to 100 kilometers, which is a little over 60 miles high. Gets above the Kármán line. The first stage comes down. It's reusable. It comes down and lands. This all takes place in Texas, in West Texas. First stage, the boost comes down and lands vertically, and the capsule will continue on, going higher. They have about 3 minutes of weightlessness. On the way down, the drogue chutes pop open, pull out the three main parachutes, and eventually the vehicle comes very close to the ground. Right before it lands, it has presses that fire to soften the landing right before it does land. And we'll see how it goes. Eventually, I suspect that sometime in the near future they'll be launching crews on this thing again. They can put up to six people at a time. Remember the first flight that went up, Jeff Bezos himself took a ride on this rocket. So we'll see. They have big plans, of course. Blue Origin is building something called the New Glenn. Under development, they've hired many more people over the last couple of years to get the New Glenn eventually ready. They plan on launching that next year, 2024. First New Glenn to go up. That's a vehicle that competes with the Falcon 9. It's much more powerful than the Falcon 9 rocket itself. Not quite as powerful as the Falcon Heavy, close to it, and we'll see how that goes. That's what this country needs, is another private company with a heavy lift vehicle. couple of more companies that are doing this type of thing, that plan on heavy lift vehicles, including another one called Relativity. But Relativity, they probably won't launch until 2026. And that will also be reusable. Any comments? WS2X.
K-E-S? Oh, K-E-2-H-A-U? No comment. I'm listening.
Very good, K-E-2-H-A-U. Thanks for listening. And I'm glad you're out there. And, I just want to bring up another topic that... been in the news, actually, not the main news, but if you go to these websites that have space news, Voyager 1 has made it to the news, has a computer problem. As you know, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, which we talked about on this net for decades, are, in this case, it's about three and a half times the distance of Pluto. To transmit and receive a signal from Earth to the Voyager 1 spacecraft, it takes roughly 22 hours to get there, so 44 hours later by the time you get a reply, which is amazing at the speed of light. But that's what they have to deal with. And now, unfortunately, Voyager 1 now has kind of a computer problem. It keeps retransmitting the same information over and over again. And they have not yet figured out what the problem is yet with this. They're working on it. They're going back, they say, the old charts and all, to try to figure out what the problem is. They might even contact retired people that were working with the project, which, I can see them doing it. They've probably done that in the past. But the idea is to try to figure out why this thing is acting the way it is. They do have the capability, if they have a problem with either one of these, it's designed where, let's say, there's a problem with navigation, for instance. Spacecraft gets pointed in the wrong direction, or the computers don't work right, or the radio doesn't work right. They have a backup radio as well, with different traveling wave tubes that they can switch from one to the other. But if something major happens with Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, it is designed to shut everything down, off. Except for the star trackers. The vehicles have star trackers on it. They look at the stars and they can tell from the pattern of the stars where they are, and they will relocate themselves to the proper position with the 12-foot dish antenna pointing directly to Earth. And it's happened many, many times before. So it's equivalent to rebooting. I don't think that was a popular term in 1977, but they used to talk about booting up computers a lot back in 1970. So and somehow that term has changed to reboot. So when you read about it nowadays, they're talking about rebooting the computer. I don't think they can send a signal to actually reboot it. I think eventually what's going to happen is Voyager is going to realize it has a problem. I think it's going to shut itself down and start all over again. We'll see. Hope it works out. Voyager 2 is still going strong. But I just hope this is not the end of the mission for Voyager 1. Any comments? Okay. And, WS1. We just covered this one topic with OSIRIS-REx. Again, another spacecraft we covered a lot here on the net. That's the one that was launched by an Atlas V rocket years ago, 2016, and it was launched with one booster attached to it, so it was called a 401 configuration, 4 meter diameter fairing, and 411 configuration, 4 meter diameter configuration, one booster, and then one second stage engine that they use, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen stage. And that launched OSIRIS-REx on its journey to Bennu, the asteroid, which it successfully eventually got to. It orbited it for a year and a half or so before it actually went down to the surface and touched the surface with the TAG unit. The TAG is the touch-and-go unit. And it's just roughly a 12-inch diameter disc that was at the end of the robotic arm. And what it had was it had a nitrogen charge inside. So when it hit the surface, the nitrogen bottle shoot off, sprayed nitrogen, and by doing that, it activated the regolith on the new and regolith shot up and got captured inside this TAG unit. After that's all done, the TAG unit, the spacecraft backs away, the TAG unit with the robotic arm was placed inside the descent vehicle, inside the spacecraft. And then the cover that goes down over that, it all latches. When the TAG unit is set, it had like 32 different little latches to seal this thing properly. So that spent another year and a half to get back to Earth. And last September, came flying through the atmosphere, successfully through the atmosphere. They expected it to land at a certain location in the Utah desert, but it didn't land exactly where they wanted it. They had to try to figure out why. What happens is it comes through with this heat shield, comes through at 25,000 miles per hour, and the heat shield heats up to 1,000 degrees, and on the way down at roughly 20 miles high, it's actually 18 miles, but 20 miles high, the drogue chutes are supposed to come out of the spacecraft, and eventually when it comes down to roughly a mile or so above the ground, then the drogue chutes would pull out the main parachute to eventually land on the surface. What happened is when they somehow, with either the software or they programmed it wrong, there's two procedures that happen when the chutes come out. One, the door opens up and the mortar goes off and the chute pulls out. The second procedure is they have these little guillotine setups which cut the cord on the drogue chutes. Eventually you have to get rid of the drogue chutes after you pull out the main parachutes. What happened was the guillotine cut up of the cord was cut first before the chute was actually sent out of the vehicle. So this thing came screaming in with a heat shield. It turned out the heat shield was very good because it did survive. It never slowed down. Well, it slowed down, but it didn't slow down the way it was supposed to with the drogue chute. They didn't come out properly. And when they did get down to the 1 mile area, they knew it was that 1 mile. The main chutes were then released, and in that process, the drogue chutes just went flying out, and they of course never opened. Anyway, that whole problem was finally figured out why it happened. And anyway, they took the little spacecraft back to eventually back to Houston, and that's where they wanted to open it up and see what was in there. They were expecting roughly 300. They wanted to get like 70 some odd grams of material. They predict they have around almost 300 grams.